back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Text line 251-343-0106 if you need to interact with the program. We got lots of time ahead. Keep the text coming. I always appreciate the feedback. Still to come on the program, my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley Jay. Also, he's from Monroe County, so we'll talk to him about what last night meant and if that does really move things. It doesn't look like it's moving things in a great place right now, at least economically. Well, we're just short-term market-wise, but we'll see. Also on the program, 11:30 block, April Marie Fogle, our Thursday regular. We'll get her to weigh in on all sorts of things. So that's coming up on the program. Joining us now, she is a candidate in the House District 96 race. She's running against incumbent Matt Simpson from Daphne, but Danielle Duggar joins us here in the Fairhope Bureau. Danielle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Hey, thanks for hopping on or coming by. We do appreciate it. Well, let's start here. How's the campaign going?
It's going really well. It's busy. As you know, 47 days left until the big day. We're just rocking and rolling. I'm out door-to-door canvassing, talking to voters. We've been to 3,300 houses so far. So it's been busy, and I'm excited. Things are looking good.
Yeah, we're a month and a couple of weeks away, and it'll be here. It doesn't seem, it went by fast, but I guess if you're moving and shaking, then that's what happens. You know, what are you hearing from people out there?
You know, when I talk to voters, they're frustrated. They're frustrated with federal politics. They're frustrated with state. They want change. They want conservatism. They want to feel like their vote and their voice matters, and that they're being heard. I'm able to tell them why I'm running, tell them about my platform, and they get on board. They're excited, and I think people are ready for change.
Well, a lot of new, I assume, that area, that district, probably a lot of new people have moved into the area, maybe aren't as familiar.
We've got some new folks, especially in my side of Spanish Fort. We've got, you know, Daphne tend to be existing homes. Those folks have been there a while. But we do have a lot of new residents. You know, what I am seeing going door to door is, you know, I'm targeting primary voters, likely primary voters. So these are all on the list from the GOP. These guys have voted in at least three out of the last four primaries. And I'm coming upon Democrat after Democrat after Democrat. And they are telling me to my face that they vote in Republican primaries specifically to choose the most liberal option. They feel like they don't have a vote in the general, so this is what they do. And they also tell me they'll be voting for my opponent because he is the liberal choice in their opinion.
Wow. So I guess that is the argument for closed primaries.
Yes, I am an advocate for closed primaries. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing these folks say they are intentionally disrupting our primary choice for the Republican Party. They want more liberal choices. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of watered down Republicans in the legislature.
Well, and, you know, we got, I guess we could cross closed primaries on the list, but what else would... Well, and it doesn't even have to pertain to this particular session. It could be things of past sessions that we haven't done. But, you know, give me kind of a progress report. What would you like to see? If you were in the Alabama legislature, where would you like to see it going?
As a, you know, fiscal conservative Republican and socially conservative, I would love to see us move in a direction more toward limited, smaller government. You know, we just passed another record budget. We've increased the budget again. We're growing government again. I would love to see that be more limited. I would love to see us cut back on some of this spending, this reckless spending. And I want to see, you know, liberty, religious liberty, constitutional rights, being protected instead of infringed. I feel like that's happened time and time again every session.
Well, give us some examples here of that.
So, you know, we've got the gas tax, the never ending, you know, all
perpetuating,
increasing gas tax, which we're currently spending 30 cents per gallon on the state portion of that tax at the pump. Every day, you know, hard earned money going into that gas pump. You can thank your 2018 legislature for that. We've had gun restrictions. I mean, 2025, they passed red flag law and they passed a gun accessory ban. We've got that happening in our supermajority Republican state, you know, and we've had several years since
the Glock
COVID,
switch, and
the Glock
all
switch right. ban, yeah, SB 116 and SB 119. You know, we've had several years since COVID, attempt after attempt to try and secure some type of medical freedom.
Well, just
in the state of Alabama.
The Alabama Department of Public Health and having the way. I mean, I guess you've changed it a little bit the way the state health officer has chosen, but I still got a problem with an all-powerful office that could shut the entire state down that's not elected. Mm-hmm. And I think there are good people, well-intentioned people, let's say, that are, you know, in place to kind of be the check and balance there. But that's not just like government for all and by the people, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're not accountable to us. They're unelected, like you said, healthcare bureaucrats who are dictating what we can and cannot do in the state of Alabama. And we saw the worst of that during COVID. So we have not had significant reform to make that either a governor-appointed position or an elected position for the state health officer.
And that's like a symptom of the overall problem. But, like, that should have been the wake-up call. COVID, the COVID experience, and Governor Ivey and the way she handled it, which a lot of people kind of cheerled, but you want to see like what government can do, even in international scenarios, and that should have been the wake up call, right?
I guess
it doesn't seem like I've forgotten about it or like a lot of people have, but we held on to the mask mandate way too long relative to the other states. We had a very aggressive, and it continued to be aggressive well after COVID, like vaccine sort of push, propaganda push.
Yes.
And, you'd go to every sporting event for like the last, they didn't do it this last year, but before mm-hmm. that it was like, get vaccinated or whatever. And
that was your tax dollars, Jeff. Our tax dollars paid for that advertising.
Yeah, and so, that. But it didn't seem to land. I mean, maybe people are just thinking big picture, federal government, politics, Fox News. But that's what getting to that was what makes me think like that should have been a wake-up call for a lot of people.
It was. It did land with the people. So when I go door to door and talk to these folks, they are saying that they never want that to happen again. They want never again legislation. They don't want their jobs to be threatened in the future. And now at this point, they've all had some type of personal firsthand experience with vaccine injury. So they know someone who's been hurt by the vaccine, and they don't ever want to be forced to do it again. But, you know, we've got other issues we need to tackle, like education reform. We're still spending $150 million a year just on that Numeracy Act so that we can prop up Common Core math in our state. And when I talk to these teachers and parents and students, they're frustrated with this math. And rather than eliminate Common Core from our state standards, we're just throwing more money at it.
So that's still a thing, Common Core.
Still a thing. And people are still upset about that. You know, there's a disconnect between what the people want, what I'm hearing, going door to door, talking to voters, and what our legislators are doing in session. Another, you know, major issue that nearly passed in 2025 was casinos, gambling, comprehensive gambling package.
And one Senate vote.
Right. And these are conservatives. You know, when you're voting for casinos in the state, you're voting for an increase in drug trafficking, sex trafficking, crime, increase in tourism. So we've already, not that we don't want tourism dollars, but we've already got strained infrastructure.
Well, it's this, though. And then there's never enough money for government with game, you know, and gaming just going to let's have it here. People are gambling anyway and we can tax it. But it's like, A, do we really need to give government more money? Probably not.
No.
But B, this is where it's different. I mean, yeah, sure, you go to Florida, Mississippi, or whatever, and go gamble, fine. But do you want the state of Alabama, the seal of the state that's, you know, we all pay for, so we're all invested in, to legitimize this, to put the insignia on it? You know, it's one thing people say, well, I'm forgiving the people the right to vote. But in our system that we all agreed upon, you are a bulwark there, and you have to make that determination. Otherwise, why not give us the right to vote on everything?
Exactly.
It's give us the right to vote on these this gas tax that they passed or whatever. Give us the right to vote on these budgets that they keep passing. You know, if we're going to do direct democracy, why are we just doing it with gambling?
Right. I believe it's a cop-out. They don't want to take accountability for that. So they want to push it off and say, well, we're just going to give the people the right to vote. And, you know, that's not what you're there for. You're to be a representative for the people. You vote for the people. Obviously, constitutional changes require a referendum, but it's just not the character of our state. It's not what we want. It's not what the people in Baldwin County want. We don't want a casino right here in Foley. And some erroneously believe that that money would be going toward education, but that last package, that money was not earmarked for education.
Well, it's even if it were, and I have a lot of questions about the ETF, but even if it were, I mean, the bureaucracy that you're going to have to create to manage a gaming regime in Alabama has got to be through the roof.
Massive.
Guys, I haven't really been paying attention to the history of government and politics in the state, but there's always somebody's always getting in trouble for corruption or something here. And you know, like that's just saying like we you know, our prison's doubled or whatever. We're going to come in with a lowball cost here and then we're going to find out. Oh, that $1 billion you were spending to police gaming, we need $2 billion or whatever, but we only raised $500 million from gambling. It's just stuff like the marijuana, the medical marijuana thing. Sorry, I'm on my own soapbox here, but
no, you're right, proceed. Jeff. You're right. No, and it's the people that I speak to going door to door, it's not what they want. Some of them may want a lottery. I try to explain the fallacy of the clean lottery bill, you know, but once you pass that Class 3 casino gaming and enable it in the state, then you automatically have casinos wherever right. There's existing gaming. So that lottery will automatically authorize casinos, full casinos.
It would take an act of the legislature, but you have a prohibition against gambling in the Alabama Constitution. And when you vote on it, guys, all you're voting on is to remove that prohibition. Now, maybe they could put language in there for a lottery or whatever that keeps it, but they haven't done that. And that opens the door for the legislature, not you, the voter, to determine what kinds of gaming you have, except on Indian casino, an Indian tribal land where the Bureau of Indian Affairs has say.
Right. Right. So, you know, one other thing I'd really like to see the Alabama legislature get right next session, hopefully I will be there to help it happen, is, protecting parental rights. We had a bill in the Alabama legislature, not we, but I think it was Susan DuBose carried it, and NVIC, who I work for, was supportive of the bill that would raise the age of medical majority in the state. This is a parental rights issue. It's not necessarily a medical freedom issue. We, as parents, don't want our children to be able to consent to mental, dental, or health care, medical health care, without our knowledge or consent. So the bill would have raised that age to 18 years old. And unfortunately, it was amended down to 16, which 16 years old, they're still kids. They're still under your roof. They're still your legal responsibility. But in the state of Alabama, they can consent. And I believe for reproductive health, it's even as low as age 12. These kids can go and get medical care, get birth control pills, do
age 12
mental health care. What if your child is struggling with gender dysphoria or something like that?
Well,
and they go and seek counseling without your knowledge or consent.
Let me pose the question to you like this, then, because I think just in some places in Alabama where you don't have that nuclear family structure, the education system is the fallback. It's a cultural problem. And is there necessarily a government fix to a culture problem?
Jesus is the only fix to the cultural problem, in my opinion. I mean, we need God in our lives, all of us. But we can protect children. We have that legal authority to, you know, make sure that if a child is under the age of 18 years old, or even 19 is the age of majority in the state of Alabama, but let's just say 18. If a child under the age of 18 is living under your roof, is on your insurance, you should have a say in what medical care they're receiving, because if something happens, God forbid, and your child is injured, you are the one responsible for them. You have to care for them. They are your legal responsibility, and they're not able to consent. We don't let them get tattoos. We don't let them purchase tobacco or alcohol products at that age. They can't vote yet. Why are we allowing them to do something that could cause permanent damage, permanent lifelong damage?
Yeah, and it's not really with your, you know, you have a system, as I call it, the fallback system in place that's making that call, and not really the parents.
Right.
Some parents, they may default to the school system, but I think a lot of parents don't want anything to do with that.
Right.
A secular school system. Let's Daniel Duggar here with us. We got one more segment. Let's get a break in here. Text line 251-343-0106. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Still to come, Bradley J. from Breitbart News. That's in the next hour, and April Marie Fogle in the 11 o'clock hour. So stick around. Still with us here for just a few more minutes, Danielle Duggar running for that House District 96 seat against Matt Simpson on May 19th. Danielle, PSC, I don't know what your thoughts are. This is certainly the news of the day in Montgomery. Up to yesterday, it passes. Where would you have fallen on this so-called reform?
Yeah, that so-called reform, that's a tough call. I mean, I see both sides. I see where the voters are thinking, okay, we might finally get a voice rather than the other bill that was appointed only, adding those appointed positions. Although this is appointed, eventually they will be elected positions, and it's freezing rates until 2029. But on the other side, as a fiscal conservative, I'm not in favor of growing government, and this is a massive growth of government with the cabinet level position, appointed position with the energy czar. So, I mean, you know, I probably would have been a no vote.
Government in the last 10 years is like economic growth, economic growth, economic growth. But what it whittles down to is like picking winners and losers. And I just, you know, like, yes, we want prosperity, but we want it kind of on a free market term, not a kind of, you know, imposed by government term. And that's what this energies are. It's just more of that, more of the same.
Right, right. And, you know, when we're giving related to the AI data centers, and when we're giving tax exemptions and we're giving, you know, government handouts and freebies, we are picking winners and losers in this industry. And, you know, growth is good, but not all growth. It's not like we need to sacrifice our character of our state and our, you know, conservative values in favor of growth. So we don't want to have a dead state where we're not growing, but we don't want government cronyism.
We have a less than satisfactory labor participation rate, and it's just that we don't have the, you know, there's no workforce development, but we're just training a workforce for, you know, for these companies so they don't have to train them. Fine, they'll have a job. Not everybody has to go to college or whatever. But so much of it is, like I said, it's picking the industries that we're going to focus on. And, you know, like, I don't know. It just we have other deficiencies as well that the state doesn't want to address. They're just big business, big government.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, our party in the state of Alabama, not in blue states, but in the state of Alabama, our party tends to lean toward big business tax increases, budget increases. And that's just not what I view as a conservative Republican platform.
Hey, one more question. We got a little short on time here. AEA, where are your You're an anti-Common Core, so I need to know where you you're not taking money from those guys, are you?
Gosh, no. The NEA is extremely liberal. I was a part of a Baldwin County, Alabama education work team. We did a study on Studies Weekly, which was the state-approved curriculum for kindergarten through sixth grade for the social studies. And it was atrocious what we found in that curriculum. We went line by line for over a year. We focused on every single piece of that text. And what we found was praising communist leaders, praising fascist leaders, historical inaccuracies, and Florida history titled as Alabama history. They completely left out our Alabama battle sites in our Alabama history. It was atrocious. And that text is supported by those folks.
Hey, real quick, folks want to find out more about your campaign. Where can they look?
DanielleDugger.com, or you can find me on Facebook, Danielle Duggar for Alabama House, District 96.
Danielle Duggar, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.